Hey, welcome to the Chess Experience. On this show, it's all about helping adult improvers. I want to make learning chess easier for you to navigate, and I also want you to have a more fun experience along the way. I'm your host, Daniel Lona, a fellow chess amateur. Let's get to it. This show is sponsored by Chess.com, the world's largest chess community. One of Chess.com's most popular features is called Game Review. This feature weaves together a lot of benefits in one post-game analysis. For example, you can see how accurately you played, whether you made any moves that were deemed brilliant or great, which makes me feel a lot better about my chess when I get one of those. And Game Review also offers a virtual coach that gives insights on every move. It'll also show you alternate lines that would have been better for you to help you understand how you can improve your game. So go on chess.com, play a game, and try out the Game Review. Welcome to this week's show. In this episode, I've decided to cover something a little different. As you may know, most of my solo episodes have been lessons I've learned from my own chess improvement practice and journey. But in this episode, instead, I'm going to share some lessons and behind-the-scenes info from 2 years of running my chess podcast. This past February was the 2-year anniversary of the launch of this show. And quick aside, if you've been with me for any of that period, thank you. You're so appreciated. But basically, I wanted to do an episode that gives a window into what I've experienced and learned from running a chess podcast for 2 years. So here's the breakdown of this episode and how I'm going to do it. I have 7 total insights. And insights is used a bit loosely. It's just kind of a catch-all term. Not everything is like something really eye-popping, impactful in terms of what you'll learn. But suffice it to say, 7 total insights. The first 2 insights are on improvement. The next 2 insights are on the chess community. And the final 3 insights are some behind-the-scenes looks into my experience running this show. Now, those last 3 aren't going to make you better at chess, but I just thought I would do something a little different, maybe satisfy some curiosity about some of the rewards and challenges of running this podcast. So I hope you find this solo episode refreshingly atypical from my usual ones. All right, here we go. Insight number 1 from running this show: chess coaches often differ on what works for chess improvement or how you should approach the process. This concept may not surprise you. You might argue that you don't need to run a chess podcast to be aware of this. That's true. But just as someone who frequently interviews chess coaches, this concept became really apparent to me early on and throughout the entirety of running this show. And I just want to make one disclaimer. When I say that they often differ, I don't mean that they usually differ or that most of the time, if you grab any 2 chess coaches and pick a topic, they're going to disagree. I just mean that it's not super uncommon for them to have differing views. I think most of the time, most chess coaches agree on the big stuff, but there are some substantial differences that do come up with regularity. And that's basically just what I want to highlight here. So let me give a few examples of where I've noticed they differ. I'm hoping you find this at least interesting, maybe even helpful. First, they can differ on the importance of playing classical games for improvement. Most coaches I've observed prioritize classical time controls for improvement. That's the consensus. But not all do. Some feel rapid games can be as or nearly as effective. I personally haven't found that to be true, and I generally don't like disagreeing with chess coaches because I tend to think they know more than me. But yeah, personally, I've found classical to be far more effective. But I have found some coaches who definitely see a lot of value in club players doing rapid games for improvement. That's one instance of where they can disagree that I find interesting. Another example is that coaches can also differ on which openings are most effective at helping you improve. There's some more, I feel like, controversial ones in terms of improvement. A couple of those can be the London and the French. I've seen coaches differ on those 2 openings. Some feel that can be still very helpful for club players to learn those. Others think there's a lot better openings as far as club player improvement goes. And so there can be some disagreement on opening choices from the perspective of club players trying to improve. A third example that I've noticed is that coaches can also differ on the role that fun plays in the improvement process and your study program. Some coaches are more strict and argue for only including those activities that optimize your improvement to the fullest. Other coaches believe there's some room to not be so strict on this point. I personally prefer the latter approach, but regardless of what I think, I believe it's worth noting this point of difference so that you can find a coach that works better for your style. And you might even think as I say that, well, Dan, I'm not going to hire a coach. That's just not something I'm going to do right now. That's true. And when I say that, what I'm thinking is we don't just learn from coaches if we hire them to work with us one-on-one. There's a lot of coaches out there that are doing educational content on their YouTube channel, blog posts, newsletters, things like that. So I find that we learn from coaches even when they're not our private coach. So that's why I say it's worth thinking about in terms of like just who you want to learn from, not necessarily in a one-on-one setting per se. But I do think it's helpful to kind of know where they stand on that position and where you stand on that position, and can help knowing those two things can help you kind of find a coach that's a bit more aligned with what you prefer. Which kind of leads me into a point I want to make about all those examples collectively. And those are just examples. That's not exhaustive, but those are just a few that have stood out to me over the years of doing podcast interviews. I think there's two lessons here. First, you don't have to adopt just one coach's advice as permanent gospel for your improvement journey. It's probably best to keep an open mind, consider trying different approaches and see what helps you most, or at least makes the most sense for what you want your chess journey to look like. The second lesson or insight that I kind of gleaned from all that is we're still learning what works and what doesn't with chess improvement. Even for coaches, it's not a hard science. Maybe one coach is right and the other is wrong. That could be exactly what's happening in a particular instance. Or it also could be that there are multiple roads to the same destination. And sometimes we're not clear on which one it is. Are they both right? Or is one actually right or wrong? That's what I'm saying. Like, it's not a hard science yet. There's some gray area here on what's effective. And I think it's important to just keep that in the back of your mind as you go through your chess journey and you're learning from other people. It's been one of the great benefits that I've had in running this podcast is sort of being really hyper aware of this fact by interviewing, sometimes just two coaches back to back weeks, and they both touched on a particular point of improvement and said something different, not just different, but maybe in opposition to each other. And so it really stands out for me when I see that happen. And it's fascinating. I'm not there to judge one as right or wrong. But I do think just observing that fact is valuable. It's been interesting for me personally. And I hope that kind of the way I articulated this and maybe how to think of these facts helps you a little bit as well. My second insight from running this show for 2 years, again, this is not like super groundbreaking. That's why I said in the beginning, insight is a loose term here, okay? I don't mean earth-shattering. It just means things that have stood out to me and just inform how I view chess, the community, my own experience, all that stuff. Okay, second insight. The best players and coaches who have appeared on my show also have an exceptional enthusiasm for the game. Now, before I dive deep into this point, let me make one disclaimer. I'm grateful for every person who has appeared on my show. They've all been a pleasure and a joy to talk to and interview. And with that said, I have nonetheless noticed that there's an exceptional enthusiasm and love for chess amongst the best known folks on the show. When it comes to the coaches, you can hear it with Bruce Pandolfini, Andras Toth, Dan Heisman, Christoph Selecki, and Yuri Krikun. You can just hear in those interviews how much they love thinking and talking about chess. Like, everybody on my show loves talking about chess, right? But there's just an extra gear that they go into that I have observed. And they just also happen to be really well-known coaches in that instance. And in other instances, they happen to be really well-known commentators or players, such as Daniel King, Irina Krush, Jennifer Shahadi, Fiona Stahl-Antoni. Those are just some of the names of people who really just seem to kind of have that extra gear of an enthusiasm. And in that bucket, they're like, some of the best known commentators and players and authors. And I just don't think that's an accident. They all have an unbridled desire to discuss the game. And so it struck me that those who excel at this game, whether as a player, coach, commentator, or some combination, are those whose passion for it runs incredibly deep. And you know, that's in some ways, that's not an unsurprising connection, right? That the people who are most successful in this game, like I said, in different ways, not always just over the board itself, but those who are most successful in some way in this game tend to be the most enthusiastic about it as well. And you can just hear it in their voice, and it's eye-opening. It's made me think, well, no wonder I'm not quite as good as them. I'm not at that level of enthusiasm for the game that they have. And I feel like I have a lot of enthusiasm for the game. I run a chess podcast. I study it every day. But theirs is just on a whole nother level. And I can see it. Oh, maybe the better phrase is I can hear it when I'm talking to them. It's just very tangible. But the good news is when I see their passion, it inspires me and it reminds me to be a little more like them, to focus a bit more on the joy of the game and perhaps a little less on my struggles or challenges. I don't know if that resonates for you, but I think that's kind of the best way to interpret that connection that they have, that passion and success that they have, the way those two are linked is a beautiful thing. And it's just a happy reminder that I think that the more enthusiasm you pour into this, the more successful you'll be in whatever way you want to be successful in chess. So I've just taken that experience from running my podcast to remind myself to find ways that I can make my journey more exciting and interesting and passion-filled so that I can emulate just a little bit of that enthusiasm that they have. So those two insights cover the improvement side of things. The next two insights that I want to share are related to community. So my third insight from running this show for 2 years is that the chess world, the chess community, is exceptionally welcoming and friendly. In fact, I'm going to make a bold claim. The chess community is better than most other skill hobby communities. I'm not claiming it's perfect by any means, but it is exceptional. And I'm saying this as someone who's been part of many other communities, both for my career and non-career interests. This includes stuff like the fitness community, the strength training community, the legal community, the audiophile community. Now you get a little taste of like the weird combination of interests that I've had. But I've been and have tried to go deep in a lot of those other communities in my other interests. And you know, I'm not saying that they're bad or anything. They're good in their own ways. But I was blown away by stepping into this chess community over the past couple of years. So yes, you know, in the ways that I'm part of the community, in the way that you are probably from an online perspective or maybe a club tournament perspective, I've experienced what you've experienced. It's been incredibly welcoming, warm, encouraging, and all of that. And I hope it stood out to you too in that way as being as exhibiting those positive traits. But my somewhat rare perspective, at least from running a chess podcast, has shown me a whole other side to how awesome this community is, in that it's incredibly accessible to the most accomplished folks in chess. I would never have been able to give you this kind of quality of guests, this roster of guests that I've been able to deliver to you on this show, for a podcast in any other endeavor or interest that I've been a part of, and probably not many others out there. It's a unique and special thing that chess offers. As a club player with very modest ability in the game, I've had the opportunity to interview exceptional guests on my show, both for their skill in chess and also how well-recognized they are in the community. In fact, it still kind of blows my mind that I've been able to interview guests like Bruce Pandolfini, Eric Rosen, and Hammer being a super GM and a well-known commentator. It's just wonderfully wild that I've had these opportunities as someone who has only recently re-entered the community a couple of years ago after decades away from it and not having had much skill in it either. Some may say kindly that it's partially because of me, but honestly, I feel that 90% of the explanation for the types of guests I'm able to have for you is just how great the chess community is at making its best personalities and best players accessible to us regular amateurs. And it's a really special thing. Insight number four from running this podcast for 2 years: make community a priority in your chess journey. It's an insight / recommendation. Look, we all struggle with the challenges of chess, dealing with losing, not having the time we want to do it, and frustration with the pace of improvement. but I believe two huge benefits to chess far outweigh those challenges. The first is the beauty of the game, and the second is the community. As I've basically heavily alluded to in my last insight and last point slash rant that I went on, is that one of the biggest joys of running this podcast has been the connection I experienced with the chess community. And that's happened in two ways. First, as I said, I've had the wonderful privilege of having these passionate conversations with guests about chess that always make me feel invigorated about the game. The second way I've engaged with the community through this podcast is being able to connect with you, with my listeners, and hear your story and get your feedback. And collectively, those two community experiences, the guests and my listeners, have altered how I feel about the game. Chess is no longer for me just about improvement, like it was in the first year of my return. Instead, now, chess has become just as much about the community for me as relishing in the game's beauty and striving for improvement. Now, the good news for you, as I describe all that, is that you really don't have to do the crazy amount of work needed to run a podcast to get those benefits. In fact, it's really just an insight that the podcast has given me that's affected all this. And that insight has led to a change in perspective. And that's sort of what I recommend, is a bit of a shift in perspective if you're not there already, which is towards realizing how much this awesome chess community can add to your experience, especially when you're intentional about it. So a lot of people connect at least incidentally online with the chess community or maybe listening to a chess podcast. But I have a couple of suggestions to give your chess life an intentional dose of community. The first is to make community experience a goal right alongside your chess improvement goals. The same way, you know, that you might write down what you may want to accomplish this month or this year in chess, I'd say just pick one thing you'd like to do community-wise as well. And I suppose you don't have to write it down, but I do recommend it being intentional and conscious. A few examples of community goals can be to, you know, check out a club if you haven't already, and maybe do a monthly club visit, OTB tournaments, maybe even teach a friend or family member the basics of chess. It's like a great way to have this community experience with the game. There's always the thing I go on and on about on this show is connecting with the Chess Punks community on Twitter, whether that's daily or even just weekly. And the final suggestion I would offer for kind of engaging with the community is a coach. I can't tell you how much it made me feel connected to just the game and everyone in it by just having a coach, even though it's just one-on-one and not like going to a club where you might interact with 20 people. It still felt very community connected. It just felt like I had a best bud to talk about chess with for an hour, even though they were telling me what I was doing wrong. But it still felt very connected and engaged in a social way. So the insight part of this, to kind of quickly recap, is that by running this podcast, I have just really realized how important community is to the chess experience. No pun intended with it being the title of my show, but I really do mean that. Like, it is so critical to enjoyment, and it helps, I think, take the sting out of losing too and things like that when you realize that it's so much more than just about winning games. So, and the other half of it is not just this insight, but hopefully to just give a little friendly nudge to you if you haven't already made community an intentional part of what you do in chess, to maybe just find one way to do that, because it really elevates the experience. And I think is one of the most impactful things you can do in your chess life. All right, so hopefully my insights up to this point weren't too preachy. And if they were a little on that side, I'm going to give you a break from that in the next half of this episode, because right now I'm not really going to be teaching anything or offering any particular lessons for the most part. Instead, I just thought I'd pull back the curtain a little bit and talk about my own experience running this chess podcast by offering a few insights. So hopefully this might just be interesting, entertaining, or just satisfy a bit of curiosity about the, you know, kind of the person behind the mic. I hope that there's some value in just kind of humanizing the podcast a little bit like this, even though it's not going to make you a better player. But I believe in this not being a 100% super formal show, but also just having people open up a little bit about their lives on this, whether that's me or my guest. So since it's almost always my guests doing that, I'll take the mic this time to talk a little bit about my own experience here. So one thing I've noticed, this is insight number five, one thing I've noticed that even after 2 years of running this show, I still always feel nervous when I interview my guests and even a bit unworthy, to be honest. But not in the worst version of what that can mean, but sort of a good version of what that can mean. Now, admittedly, I've gotten better over the couple of years on nervousness, but it has not gone away by any stretch. At this point, I've done over 80 interviews for this show. The vast majority have been titled players, and some have even been chess celebrities. And yes, in all of those instances, I've been rather nervous to interview them, both during the interview and before we record. And a big part of that is I feel like I've won the lottery each time. In my head, I'm thinking somehow I, this lowly club player, gets to interview a titled player, someone who has achieved so much at this game and has lived and breathed it their entire life, far beyond anything I will achieve in it. And yet I'm supposed to ask them questions about it. And so, yes, there's also a touch of unworthiness that I feel in that. And you can say I shouldn't feel that way, and I probably shouldn't. But the upshot to feeling that way is it keeps me humble and grateful. And I count those as two qualities that are positive about my show as a host, that I try to be very humble with the people I interview. I understand that they, in almost every instance, know way more about chess than I do. That leads to the gratitude part of it, which is that I'm very grateful that they are taking an hour of their time at no cost to just, you know, dispense freely their experiences, their wisdom, their amazing chess advice. And that's why you always hear me at the beginning of an episode and at the end of an episode, and often in between as well, express so much gratitude and excitement for the people who are on these episodes. I just feel so impressed and so ridiculously lucky to chat with them. Like I said, there's no lesson there in me telling you that. It's just a peek behind the curtain. Yeah, I typically feel pretty unworthy and always nervous to varying degrees, depending on the guest and depending on at which point you hear me do an episode. I'm less nervous now than in the beginning, but they're always there. But like I say, I think that leads to humility and gratitude, which are positive things at the end of the day for this show. The sixth insight that I have sharing about this show after 2 years of doing it, and I hope this doesn't sound like too much like a complaint or anything, but it's just a reality of it. Like if I were to just tell you the biggest challenge, it is finding a new guest every week, week after week. That is the hardest part of running this show. So that's kind of like they exist on opposite sides of the coin with guests. The best part of the show is interviewing all these amazing people, and that's my favorite aspect of it, tied with when I hear someone say that it had a positive, that listening to the episode had a positive impact on them. Those are pretty closely tied. But the flip side to getting all these great people is the work that goes into finding them and having them appear on the show. So yeah, keep in mind that not everyone I ask says yes or even responds at all. And there are many who are interested and are basically a yes, but they're just too busy in the coming months ahead to do it. You think about a lot of the players that I'm interviewing, you know, they're going to country after country after country, doing tournament after tournament. And it's just not easy for a lot of these awesome people who I'd love to have on the show, schedule time to do an interview. And so even when they are a yes, they have the interest and desire to be on the show, it's just logistically difficult. So being able to find a high quality guest who is both interested and available is a frequent challenge. Plus, I want to find folks I feel would make a good guest for you. Someone who will bring value or insights or entertainment, and a person who can be a good communicator in an interview context. So yeah, I look for those things too that go beyond just say, you know, like having great experience in the game or great skill in the game. And at the end of the day, checking all those boxes at once takes a lot of time and effort, more than meets the eye, more than I imagined when I began this show. And so that's the biggest challenge of running the show if someone were to ask me that. And again, I don't mean that as a complaint, but just sort of as an insight into, you know, just how this show is put together, what some of the challenges are. Hopefully that's of at least modest interest to hear. But of course, it's all worth it in the end. Which leads me into my final insight, but it's kind of like the biggest one to discuss. I wanted to offer, it's not a singular insight, but I wanted to give you my top five most meaningful guest interviews. And when I say meaningful, I mean that from my perspective. I don't know if it'll be meaningful for you. These are the ones that had just a little extra impact on me, and I'll explain why. Now, again, a disclaimer. I sincerely love talking to every single guest who has appeared on this show. They were all fantastic in their own way. But again, this just had a little something extra tied to this particular episode that made it personally meaningful for me. And a not-so-secret hope of mine in sharing this is that you go back and maybe listen to one of them if you haven't already. I'm only going to spend about a minute per guest slash episode. So I'm going to go through these pretty quickly. All right, here we go. Number one, National Master Bruce Pandolfini, episode number 28. If you're not familiar with him, Bruce is a legend in writing amazing books for club players and for being a chess consultant on many Hollywood films, including The Queen's Gambit and Searching for Bobby Fischer. And Bruce was effectively my first chess coach. When I got excited about chess in a serious way for the first time in my life, his books were the ones I bought and studied. In 1993, I saw the film Searching for Bobby Fischer. I got hugely excited about chess, and I was thrilled to realize that the character, if you want to call him that because he's a real-life person, but the character of Bruce Pandolfini, that his books were half of the books on the shelves in the bookstore under chess. And I couldn't have been more excited. So I bought up a bunch of his books at the time and just learned a ton from him back in the 90s. So it was such a great honor to interview him a couple of years ago. It was like a dream come true for me and a full circle moment in my chess career. Plus, he gave a fantastic interview that many people sent in comments to me that they loved it. And so I definitely recommend checking out that episode. You can probably hear my giddiness talking to him, and he gave a superb interview. That's episode number 28. Number two on my list of extra meaningful episodes is Rochelle Ballantyne, number 41. If you saw the great chess documentary Brooklyn Castle, you saw Rochelle Ballantyne, who is one of the main people featured in the film. And if you haven't seen Brooklyn Castle, I highly recommend it. It follows a Brooklyn chess club at a middle school that regularly produces some of the most talented kids in America in chess. So having her as a guest was meaningful for me in two ways. First, I loved this movie well before I started the podcast, so getting to interview one of its stars was really exciting. And the second and much more significant reason is that we had an amazing discussion on what the experience is like for Black women in the chess world and for Black people in general. It's not a discussion that's often had, yet I think it's important for everyone in chess as we try together to make this a better community. It's fascinating, it's a little heartbreaking, but it is really meaningful and significant, and what she has to say is touching and inspiring and hopeful. So, check out Rochelle's interview. She's an inspiration. That's episode number 41. Third on my list of top five personally meaningful interviews was Grandmaster Irina Krush. Irina is known for being the first and only American woman to earn the GM title. Just reading through her chess life as part of my research for the interview, I was in awe and totally inspired with all that she had accomplished. But reading about someone online is one thing, and then talking to them live is a whole other experience. And the conversation I had with her just took my admiration for her to a whole new level. It's a bit intangible. It's hard to describe. It's more of one of those things that you listen to her and you get it. She conveys such strength and confidence in what she has accomplished and what she will continue to achieve. And I just became a huge fan of her after that interview. I was a fan before, and then I became a huge fan after talking to her, after just getting this window into what she was like as a person. It's very inspiring. Listen to Irina speak for 1 hour. Tell me you don't come away feeling very similar about her confidence and strength. Her episode is number 44. Fourth on my list of especially meaningful episodes for me personally is International Master Eric Rosen. His episode is number 29. Eric was special to me because in my first year of returning to chess, I watched a lot of his streams, his commentary, and his performance in the online tournament with chess.com, I'm Not a GM. And from all of that, I got to know him a fair amount, from a distance, a fair amount, and admire what he does. Plus, he's such a popular name in the chess community. He's one of the biggest streamers in chess, and rightfully so. He brings a kindness and calmness to the experience that we need, given how hyper-competitive and stressful chess can be. He is the antidote to those things, a wonderful antidote to those things. So I was ridiculously honored to have someone of his talent and fame come on my humble show. And no surprise, Eric gave a phenomenal interview. Lots of people love that one too. His episode is number 29 if you want to check it out. And number 5 on my list, and by the way, these are just numbered, this isn't ranking, but number 5 on my list of extra meaningful, personally meaningful episodes for me is woman grandmaster Jennifer Shahadi. She is quite simply my top role model in chess. Why? Her competitive accomplishments, 2-time U.S. women's champion, her joyful energy, and her tireless effort to make our community better for women and girls. She's a legend in the chess community, and I still can't believe that someone of her caliber honored me by appearing on one of my earliest episodes, episode number 14, and has been on since a second time as well. But in particular, I want to highlight episode 14, the first time she appeared on the show, because of just the wow factor for me of having someone of her accomplishments and her awesomeness appear at such an early stage in the show. Plus, that episode still stands as one of the best of my entire podcast, in my opinion. Jennifer, Jennifer is just always great unto herself, and that's like 90% of the reason. But 10% of it is also that I think we have a good rapport in our conversations. Sometimes you just get a little lucky and you can connect a little more with some guests than others. And I feel like Jennifer and I connect pretty well together. And I think you can hear that in that episode. So if you haven't heard it, check it out. That's episode number 14. And so that concludes my top 5 personally meaningful episodes that I wanted to share. And also overall, that covers the 7 insights that I wanted to share for this episode and just my experience running this show for 2 years now, a little bit on improvement, a little bit on community, and then just a little bit on what it's like to run this show. But before you go, please stay with me for just one more minute. I have just a couple of quick comments that I want to finish this episode with. First, you may have heard me say a few times over the course of this show and my solo episodes and on Twitter that for the past year and a half, I've had a pretty rough road with my health. While that has been a struggle, thankfully, knock on wood, the worst days of it are over. I'm feeling a lot better these days. And I appreciate you for being patient with my podcast and some of the inconsistency that's resulted from that. But I expect that to be turned around as we go forward. Second, and this is key, I haven't begun to create even half of what I want to with this podcast because of those health challenges. But with that barrier now lifted, I'm going to be working hard to create more for you and me with this show. Some examples of what that means: my long anticipated membership relaunch is on the horizon in about 6 weeks. I also want to bring you some new exciting guests that I've not yet had on the show. And ultimately, I want to make this show a bigger and more connected experience for you. As great as weekly episodes are, I plan to do a lot more than that. So I just want you to know that's all around the corner. And so in many ways, this show is just getting started, even though I'm talking about having done it for 2 years. So thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this solo episode. I'll close with Bruce Pandolfini's sign-off that he said to me and in his emails, and I just loved it. To chess. See you next week. Thanks for listening. This has been a production of my business, Adult Chess Academy. And that has a website with the same name if you want to look for it. You can also find me being way too active on Twitter by searching my username, Lona_chess. See you next week.